Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Yes, Justin. So I'm planning to sell my condominium, which is it's paid off, and I would like to know if it's a good idea to invest this money in an income program.
And provides unbiased answers.
So there's nothing wrong with that strategy of putting in something moderately conservative in a 3 to 5 year time frame, saying you need to use it. You can still take some risk with that.
Invest Talk, over 30 million downloads and counting.
Hi, I am a young person living in an expensive city. My fiance and I both make a lot more money than our parents, but we know that our parents haven't been saving for retirement.
Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, April 14th, 2021 edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you all tuning in this hour, and I am here to help you become a better investor, better with your money. That is my goal each and every weekday, myself and Steve. And on this podcast, we operate with the mission statement of independent thinking and shared success. So no matter what I'm talking about, individual stocks, the market as a whole, explaining things about different industries and asset classes, whatever I'm speaking about today, I will be presenting it all without bias. I'm just here to give you the facts as I see them using the data in front of me, as well as my 20 years of investment experience. Now, I'm Justin Klein. Of course, we encourage you to contact us with your finance and investment questions. And when you do that, you get to shape the show to your liking. In fact, you can call right now and interact with me live during our live stream program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, or you can leave a question on our Anytime Voice Bank, which the number never changes, as always, is 888-99-CHART. So let's get straight to our first listener question now.
Good afternoon, guys. Love the podcast. This is Christian from Los Angeles, California. Looking at ticker symbol J&J, that's Johnson & Johnson. Looking to add a position on it. Just wanted to get your analysis on it. Thanks. Appreciate the show. Have a good one.
All right, looking at Johnson & Johnson, and this was recently in the news because of their vaccine, which seemed a little rash to take it off the market. 6 out of 6.8 million had blood clots, and not even sure it's related, et cetera. So we'll see what that, you know, as they go through the trials, because they're still doing some other trials on this. But, and I've said this before, that Johnson & Johnson's so big with quarterly sales of $22 billion, that the vaccine isn't really a big growth driver in that way. So I don't really think this is that important from that perspective. From a profitability perspective, that's the way I look at it more, is what's the cash flows, and cash flows are very, very strong, $20 billion in free cash flow trailing 12 months, growing. And it's a $420 billion market cap, so roughly a 5% free cash flow yield, which is solid. You look at its long-term profitability, return on equity, average over the last decades, about 20%. Solid. Very, very good. 20% is a very good return on equity, especially for such a large company. So you're going to get a nice 2.5% dividend yield as well. That's solid. They're diversified amongst not just your drugs, but also medical devices as well, and oral care, and you know, it's just a very diversified company. 80% of sales are driven by drugs and devices, but it's diversified globally as well. Half of total revenue is generated here in the U.S. and half domestic or abroad. So you could, if you're looking for medical exposure, it's hard to do worse than a company like J&J. Now, is it overvalued? No. Is it particularly undervalued? No. I would say it's about value. In fact, our value is somewhere in the neighborhood of $160. Well, what's it trading at now? 159, spot 92 at the close today. So it's pretty much fairly valued. So longer term, you'll do well. Probably better than most stocks, you know, over the next decade, to be honest with you. So as a core holding in your portfolio, there's nothing wrong with J&J. So I like it. It's just a matter of, are there better opportunities out there? So that's the question. And if you want lower risk on the risk spectrum, remember, all equities are risky. But this is definitely be one on the lower side of the equity risk spectrum. Now, our phone lines are open right now. You can call us at 888-99-CHART. I encourage you to get your calls in sooner rather than later. Now, let's check in on the market today. We had a very modest down day. S&P was down about 17 points. NASDAQ was off 138 points. That was about a 1% drop late in the day. We were overbought. Should not be a shock. We came into earnings season, and we had pretty much two big earnings reports that came out today. One was JP Morgan and the other was Wells Fargo. And let me take a look at this. Yep, JP Morgan, that they were down a bit, $2.88, call it 2%. And Wells Fargo, that was better than expected, up about $2.20, about 5%. Goldman Sachs also had earnings. That was up decently on the day, but kind of sold off later in the day. And those were the three big news items this morning. There were some earnings after the bell, but nothing of note. Tomorrow we get Bank of America, Citigroup, Pepsi, Rite Aid, BlackRock, United Health, Delta Airlines, U.S. Bank Corp. So a lot of earnings to note. Let's just say that tomorrow. And we are starting to get in the heart of earnings season. And this is where I think you're going to start to see a little bit more potential volatility. And that shouldn't shock anybody, especially get back into the back half of the year. And those base effects start to wear off. And that's what we're seeing right now. Base effects and earnings reports are going to look pretty good, especially if you're looking year over year. Because part of Q1 of 2020 was a complete economic shutdown. And Q2 was almost entirely government shutdown, an economic shutdown. So year over year, things are going to look good. You're going to need to start looking at maybe more quarter over quarter, although that tends to be, from earnings outlook, tough to really measure. Especially if you're going based on the fourth quarter. A lot of consumer companies are back-end loaded in the fourth quarter of earnings. So, once again, it's going to be about future earnings, most of all. What are CEOs, management teams thinking about for the back half of the year, for the full year, and into 2022? Because 2022 will be more likely to be a year where earnings are more realistic. Government crackdowns or government draconian measures to contain COVID will likely be gone by the end of the year. Potential tax increases will likely be gone, or will be implemented as well. So all those will be big factors during this earnings season. Now, why are we here today? Well, why am I doing this podcast? So it's to help you do a better job of securing your own financial future. And while I was on vacation last week, your goal of financial freedom can't take a vacation. And that's why you need information and effective strategies to help deal with this changing market, this evolving market, and this uncertainty. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Let's head out to Northern California and talk with Owen. He's looking at Green Brick Partners. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it. And also, I was wondering what you thought about the pullback on Molecular Templates, ticker symbol MTEM. I know they're not profitable, but they're beginning to gain profits in these last couple quarters.
Okay, well, let's start with Green Brick Partners. This is a company that builds single-family homes, it looks like, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and this is typically in the Southeast and Texas?
Yeah, I believe so.
So clearly the housing market is strong, especially in areas like Texas, because of more people working from home and looking for cheaper places to live. Tax rates in Texas are lower than a lot of other maybe left-leaning states with higher tax rates, like here in California, and there's a lot of people moving there. So I like that. And inventory for existing homes is near record lows because of eviction moratoriums and because of mortgage moratoriums. And as long as those are in place, which looks like they will be for a lot of this year, then inventory is going to remain low. And so I like this. I like the industry in the short to medium term, because I don't see – I see the government's using the excuse for with COVID to continue this moratorium to keep people in their homes, which you could argue for or against. I don't really care. It's more about what government policy will be, and I just see that's the way that they're going to go. Now, longer term, this is a company whose profitability has been up and down, but recently is near an all-time high because of the strength in the market, and the chart looks pretty solid. So it's a small builder. It's in a good area like Texas, and so I'm going to give it generally a thumbs up. Now, I think the other one was MTEM, you said?
Yes.
Well, this is Molecular Templates, and you know, I'm just going to pass on it. These aren't I don't know enough about it and their technology. They've always lost money, and their revenue's pretty minuscule. Technicals look poor. Now, we'll say it's near support, but that doesn't give me a whole lot, especially for a name that, oh, if you go back on a monthly chart, it's just destroyed capital ever since it's gone public. split adjusted back in 2006, it was $1,100 a share. Now it's at $5. So unless I know more about this business, I'm going to pass on it. Thanks for the call, Owen. Let's go to Taylor in Philadelphia. He's looking at Playboy.
Hey, how's it going, Justin?
Going well. Did you pick up Playboy?
I did. I picked it up about 6 weeks ago, around $18. Obviously, it's run up really high. The volatility's kind of been all over the place, but I like the brand, and I just want to know how you decide a value on a company that's so new, and with the lack of, you know, deep financials going back years, what sort of factors go into that?
Yeah, this has been a challenge for us, because we did buy this, actually our first purchase of this when it was the day before a de-SPAC. So actually, I think the symbol was CAC or something like that. I forget exactly what it was. So we bought it back in the low teens for clients. Now it's at 36, and that was a couple months ago. But what we saw was the strength of that brand and the seriousness of the management team that had plans for the brand to expand it into consumer markets with their own products, make strategic acquisitions, and to license their deep intellectual property that, frankly, is the third most recognized brand, consumer brand in the world behind Nike and Coca-Cola. So with that, we said, hey, they have a serious management team after decades of Hugh just using the brand as kind of his personal piggy bank and wasn't serious about utilizing that brand. He was great building the brand, but from a monetization standpoint, he wasn't great at it. And so now that he's gone, it has a better management team. Now, forward-looking, their expected licensing revenue itself is expected to approach $1 billion a year by 2024 or 25, excuse me. And so you have that, which typically is very high margins, along with all the other potential avenues they're going. They're looking at the cannabis space, sexual wellness, etc. There's just so much that they can do. So I think ultimately this is a triple-digit stock, to be honest with you. So that's the way we look at it. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. And with all the changes we see happening, it's important to remember that I am here to help you in any way. We're taking calls live at 888-99-CHART.
Steve and Justin have recorded a special bonus podcast. It's a fast-paced learning podcast for the average investor. It's free, so be sure to tell your friends. It can be downloaded now at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and investtalk.com. Look for Rapid Fire Hour.
Let's go talk with Andreas in Riverside, looking at Okta Inc., OKTA, one of the largest cybersecurity names in the world, or I guess in the cloud space, just to say that. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it, but I was wondering what you thought about it. I heard some positive, investors looking to buy this and pitching it as a buy. But when I'm looking at the fundamentals, and again, I'm pretty new at this, but trying to follow you guys' advice, looking at the margins, looking at the returns, and especially the price per sales, the numbers seem really strange to me. It doesn't seem like a good place. The fundamentals don't look great to me. So I was just wondering if I'm just missing something or if you think that it's probably not a good time to invest in this.
No, you're not missing anything. It's trading at enterprise value to EBITDA or enterprise value to revenue of 41. I said this before. 10 is expensive. 20 is extreme. So 40, you would imagine what 40 is. It's very, very high. So that's my biggest issue here. It's a good business. It now is producing positive free cash flow since the beginning of last year. So that's a good thing. But it's still a $34 billion market cap on a company whose free cash flow is $100 million. And yes, it's growing its revenues around 40% per quarter. And that's nice. And I think they're going to continue to trend more into profitability like they did for 2021 full year. They had earnings of 11 cents. And so I like the company. I just don't like the valuation. I think it's still extreme. Technicals are weakening. And I just wouldn't. This is not a name that is going to likely do well over the medium term as the market evolves from growth focus to more value, hard asset focus type of companies that will lead. And so this is a name that personally we have on our watch list, but it still remains far away from where we'd pick it up. So that's what I'd recommend for you. Keep it on your watch list, but be patient with it. Let's head over to Sonoma, talk with James. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good. I was going to ask your opinion on the strategy of possibly substituting one of the big phone companies, Verizon or AT&T, for some bond investments, since bonds seem to be trickling down and these companies trade in a narrow range and the dividend seems to be secure, although I'm a little worried about AT&T because of the debt. What do you think of that strategy and which company would you pick?
So are you saying sell your Verizon and AT&T and buy into corporate debt of some kind?
No. Instead of having bonds,
oh, gotcha.
Maybe take some of that bond money and putting it to the big phone companies.
So you're saying
not
the opposite.
Go away.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Now, I would say Verizon would be probably the safer one, but that's also why you're going to get a 4.4% yield. We like both of them, but to me, from a risk-reward standpoint, I still think AT&T is the better of the two. And your yield is better, 7% currently, and they do have a good amount of debt. But their business remains solid and strong. They have a lot of potential upside to parts of their business with the Time Warner deal and HBO and HBO Max. And I think that's going to slowly continue to grow and grow and become a bigger competitor to the Netflixes of the world. Because frankly, historically, HBO has a much better track record of content, putting out good content, than Netflix does. Certainly Netflix is a shorter time period to prove that, but history says HBO does very, very well. And so I still like AT&T a bit more, and where interest rates are, where high grade and even high yield corporate bond yields are, I do think you're going to get a better return with something like an AT&T or a Verizon. And I like that strategy if you're going to do it, but it is a bit higher risk. Let's go to James from Seattle. Let's talk about semiconductor stocks.
Yeah, hey, Justin. I've been reading a lot about the global semiconductor shortage and not totally sure about whether or not this would be a good buying opportunity for... maybe Lam Research, LRCX, and is there validity in this shortage? That does that mean it's going to benefit the semiconductor stocks that much?
Well, I would say there is validity. The issue with using that as a backdrop for your investment thesis is that typically when something hits the news wire and everyone's reading about it, it's too late. It's already priced in. You've seen a lot of these semiconductor stocks rally dramatically. Now, one thing I do think will be a multi-year, maybe even decade process is onshoring of semiconductor manufacturing. And I think that is a better way to look at it, more targeted way. Typically, it's a very cyclical industry. And so capacity, while harder to bring on today than it was years ago, is still going to be put on. So I would pause. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are independent financial advisors. For clients, they are fiduciaries. Steve and Justin have a duty and a commitment to always place the interests of their clients ahead of the firm. This is different from the way many other organizations operate. And one way you can realize the benefit of an association with KPP Financial is to know that KPP practices parallel investing. This means that the personal investment accounts of KPP principals participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. It's an important difference. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com.
At KPP Financial, we offer independent thinking with shared success.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
The markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My focus point today concerns a story that the Labor Department says consumer prices jumped more than expected, pushed up by gasoline prices up 9.1% year over year. And this is a story that shouldn't shock anybody, although the projections for a 0.5% monthly increase came in at 0.6, and year-over-year was expected to be 2.5, came in about 2.6, so a bit higher than expected, but it was the highest year-over-year inflation figure since August 2018, and well above last month's, which is 1.7%. So this shouldn't be a shock. We're starting to get into these base effects of March, April, May of last year. So the CPI number is going to look high. Gasoline prices itself are up 22.5% year over year. Remember how gasoline prices fell dramatically in March of last year. Energy prices as a whole are up 13%. Food prices up 3.5%. Grocery store index, that was up 5.4%. Okay. So you're also seeing a jump for food away from home, restaurants. That was up 6.5% year over year. So the cost of not only the underlying food, but paying workers and the cost to keep everyone sanitized from COVID, all that is kind of adding up. Now, core CPI, which excludes food and energy, which I always hate when they look at, but that increased 1.6% year over year. So that wasn't really that high. But always interesting to see these numbers. But in a lot of ways, they're likely to be transitory. This is not something that we're not going to have these base effects 6 months from now. And that's what I'm most interested in. Is what will inflation look like? Where will the dollar be 6 months from now as we spend more, issue a lot of debt over the next couple of months? I think somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 billion, if I'm remembering correctly, which is going to be a record for a month. Now let's keep things moving. Let's go to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I am a young person living in an expensive city. My fiance and I both make a lot more money than our parents, but our parents want to help us with our upcoming wedding, so they're getting us a pretty good amount of money that they had saved away. But we know that our parents haven't been saving for retirement, so what we want to do is secretly save that money and give it to them back monthly as a gift when they are in retirement. They're in their late 50s, so it'll probably be 5 to 10 years. And we're wondering what the best use of the lump sum is. It's between $10,000 and $15,000. We don't want to do anything too high risk because they will be approaching retirement soon. But at the same time, we also have our own savings accounts already for our retirement that are higher risk since we're younger. So I guess I'm just wondering what the best use of that money would be to prepare them for retirement. Thank you.
Well, this is a little tricky because you want to do it without them knowing. And the best use of that would be to put that money into some sort of an IRA or a Roth IRA for them. But they need to report that. And they need to open up the account. You can't open up that for them under their Social Security number without them signing it. So that's going to be a little difficult where is that money, what type of account is that money going into? Remember, an IRA, Roth IRA, it's just an account type. It's not an investment itself. Now, what you should put that money in, that is a more complex question. At another age, they make less than you. Does that mean they also have no retirement? They have some retirement. How close are they to retirement? How much should be in equities, fixed income, commodities, etc.? Those are all complicated questions. So I really would need to know a little bit more. I love that you're doing this. I love that you're kind of giving back, and you know that you don't need it nearly as much as they do. But they're insisting, I'm sure. So maybe shoot me an email with a little more details, and I could help you out some more. But hopefully that gave you some way to think about that and come to a conclusion, but I'd be happy to help with that conclusion as well. Now let's take another caller question, this time from a listener in Minnesota.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Longtime caller here from Minnesota. Love your show and learn a lot. Anyways, I have a question today. I'm looking for a fund, I guess, or a stock in the medical sector. And there's a few of them that I like. I don't know which one is better than the other. So I found this fund, IHI. Does that look like a good one? I think it pays a pretty good dividend, and I don't think there's any debt really attached to it. So just wondering what your thoughts were on IHI. Thank you for your thoughts. I'll look forward to listening to them on the show.
Well, this is the iShares U.S. Medical Device ETF, and I kind of like this because I think there's less regulatory potential scrutiny on prices and pricing pressure longer term for medical devices versus, say, pharmaceuticals. I think there's going to be more pricing pressure on that front just because you've seen more abuse there from various actors. And medical devices, a lot of it, you actually have to produce oftentimes complex, high-tech products, and it's easier to justify, I think, the margins on those politically. And so I rather own this than something that's more pharma focused. Now, I will say some of the top names in this are a bit overvalued. Abbott is a great company, 14% of this fund, highest position, a bit overvalued. Thermo Fisher Scientific, Medtronic, Danaher, Intuitive Surgical, Stryker, a few of those are also pretty expensive as well. So I would be more digging into some individual names and look at the top holdings here. It has 66 separate equity holdings in total. And so that's the way I would do it. But you're getting a nice broad exposure here, which I like. But once again, I would be more creating my own basket of 5, 6, 7 names that I really like out of the companies within this particular ETF, as well as some smaller ones as well. So I like what you're thinking about. I'd just be a little more targeted myself. This is Invest Talk. Next up, we're going to head out to Hawaii for this question.
Hi, Rowan calling from Honolulu, Hawaii. I was wondering what you guys thought about Nokia stock. Seems like it might be a good buy and have, you know, long-term potential with 5G. Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Thank you.
All right, looking at Nokia. This is one of the largest telecom companies in the world, Finnish. They're a developer of telecom infrastructure mainly. $23 billion market cap. But the issue here is the lack of growth. They're just kind of stagnant. Earnings in 2017 were 38 cents. Expected next year, earnings of only 31 cents. Earnings in 2022 were 32 cents. And that's the main issue here is it's a business that still is consistent, still is creating profits and cash flow, but just not exciting. It's really the issue. Profitability is up and down over the last decade from negative return on equity to as high as 46% back in 2014. No real economic moat. Yes, there's some opportunity with 5G in the near term, but it just doesn't get me excited. They have a good balance sheet, solid cash flows. It's somewhat cheap, but if you look on the backdrop of lack of revenue growth in the midst of a 5G rollout globally, where's the beef here? I don't see anything that gets me that excited about it, so I'm going to pass. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, so I encourage you to get your calls in sooner rather than later. Now that we're through the first quarter, I think it's worth time to take a minute to make you aware of some of the benefits of working with myself and Steve Peasley through our company, KP Financial. We're based in Irvine, California. And let me remind you that here in Invest Talk and in our company, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking and shared success. And how do we do that? Well, on and off air, we provide that unbiased guidance and we practice parallel investing, meaning we implement the same strategies for our clients as we do for ourselves in our own portfolios. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free offer to provide a portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeetings. Send us a message through investtalk.com or call our KPP Financial offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. After you speak to us just for a few minutes, we can see how we can help make a difference in your financial life. Now, there's no obligation. We'd love to talk, and we'd love to help you in any way. Next, we have a question that we seem to get each month, but we are constantly adding new listeners, so it's okay to revisit the topic of trading apps. That one will be next.
There is good news for loyal InvestTalk listeners, their friends, and families. Steve and Justin have recorded a special bonus podcast. This free podcast is available for download anytime. Typically, each day and night, the InvestTalk call center receives more voicemail questions than Steve and Justin can fit into a live show format. So in the bonus program, caller questions will be played back from our voice bank and answered with brief, unbiased, and helpful responses. The first segment of the Rapid Fire Hour is hosted by Justin Klein, and Steve Peasley handles the second half. It's a fast-paced learning podcast for the average investor. It's free, so be sure to tell your friends. It can be downloaded now at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and InvestTalk.com. Look for Rapid Fire Hour.
Hi, this is Zach in Oakland. I was just wondering about the analyst ratings on Webull and FinViz and Robinhood and if they're accurate or not. Like when it says there have been 9 analysts and 67% of them say to buy, an example is ticker symbol LAC. Is that really good advice? What would you say, and where could I find better analyst advice, if possible?
Well, let's back up here and talk about analysts and what analysts are good for. Analysts are good for earnings, sales, projections. They work for a big bank typically. They are canvassing the industry, talking with management, and utilizing their data to project out next quarter, full year, next year, of what earnings are going to be. And history says, though, that analyst price targets or buy or sell recommendations are extremely mixed, meaning there's not a whole lot of value in those price projections. Oftentimes, they're using their earnings and sales projections going forward and just taking a multiple approach. They think this company is going to make $2 next year. The average company in their industry is trading at 20 times earnings. Maybe they think that it's a bit better than the average company within the industry. So maybe it's going to put a 25 times earning projection or 25 times multiple on that stock. And it's going to come out at a $50 target. And oftentimes the stock can go up and go past 50 and they're going to feel like they're behind the eight ball and say, well, now it needs to trade at 35 times. And now their stock price is 70. So they're very reactionary in that way. If multiples across the industry expand or contract, they don't know that. They don't know that's going to happen. So utilizing analyst rankings of a buy or sell just isn't reliable in any way. It should not be the basis of anyone's buy or sell decisions. Now, once again, if you're looking at, you want to know what they're likely to earn in the coming year or two, an analyst projection is probably pretty useful. They tend to be closer to the company, closer to the industry than most. It's their job. But utilizing it as a buy or sell decision just doesn't add up. And in practice, it's not a great way to make an investment decision. Thanks for the call. Great question. And you know, there's a lot of sources for that, for these ratings. Many times, there's conflicts of interest as well. If, for example, the under, and you've seen this back, I think there was a Sarbanes-Oxley, I forget the exact legislation, although the legislation didn't solve the problem. But the problem is that oftentimes the investment bank is also underwriting the bond offering or more equity offerings. And in order to get that business, they're not going to put a sell rating on that company. They're going to put a buy rating on it. And so there's a lot of conflicts of interest on that side as well. So once again, don't use analyst price projections for buy and sell decisions. All right, Fernando in San Francisco, hang on. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here to help you achieve your own particular version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk with Fernando in San Francisco. He has a question about real estate.
Yes, Justin. So I'm planning to sell my condominium, which is it's paid off. And I would like to know if it's a good idea to invest this money in an income program. Basically, have that money pay for my rent and wait a few years for the market to go down.
Correct.
For the housing market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think idea? I think it's a pretty good idea. A lot will depend on what your goal for that money will be, or that rent price. How much money do you think you'll be able to cash out, and then what do you think your rent will be?
So basically, it's a small apartment. Let's say $300,000, and to rent something equal, it will run about $2,000 a month per month.
Okay. So, see, that's going to be tough because even at 5%, which is a reasonable number to get in this market, it's a bit of a stretch, especially in, say, high-grade corporates or something like that. That's only about $15,000 a year, and $2,000 a month, that's $24,000. So you probably would not be able to pay for your entire rent just with the income off that $300,000. So I will say that. So you have to understand that you're stretching there a bit.
Okay. So, but then my income will become I could save all of my income or cover whatever is needed. But the main purpose would be to...
Certainly that's going to help pay that rent, but just know that it's not going to cover it. If you have other income, there's nothing wrong with that strategy of putting in something moderately conservative in a 3 to 5 year time frame, saying you need to use it. You can still take some risk with that, but don't expect it to cover all of your rent. But as long as you have other income, know that it can help augment your rental payment. So I hope that helps. Thanks for the call, Fernando. Now let's squeeze in another question. This one might be the final call of the day. It came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hi there. I'm calling to get your opinion on Reliance Steel. Ticker is RS. I've owned this, and I have a sizable return, and wondering if now is time to exit the position or if you guys feel that there is more run room with this. Seems to be getting a bump from this infrastructure bill, but buy the rumor, sell the news kind of deal is kind of why I'm wondering if it's time to get out. Appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
All right, great question. I like the way you're thinking is that, hey, the news is out, and oftentimes after the news is out, the stock sells off or the narrative starts to wear off. Everyone talks about the potential news event and the rumor, and then it happens, and they talk about it for a few days, and then everyone moves on to the next thing. And so that's kind of where buy the rumor, sell the news comes. Now, Reliance Steel, this is one of the largest U.S. steel manufacturers, and earnings are expected this year to be at an all-time high of $10.91. So that's good. Longer term, if you look at their profitability, it's up and down. It's an industry that is a price taker for the most part. Now, Reliance itself does have some more specialty products, but in general, they're making steel, and steel is easy to get everywhere. But it's one of the best run steel companies, and the chart looks strong. It looks steady. It's consolidating here around the 150 level. So I see nothing really wrong with the chart. The fundamentals are a little bit expensive, but not completely out of whack. So what I would do is I would have a stop loss on this. This has held the 100-day moving average. Right now that's at about 132, and it's going to continue to rise as the days go on. And that would be my out. If it closes multiple days below that 100-day moving average, I would be out. And I would hold it otherwise. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. We post a new program each weekday after the end of our live stream broadcast, which concludes at 5 p.m. Pacific time. You can get your free download anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, as well as InvestTalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.